200, mostly women and children. The Islamic resistance in Iraq carries out new anti-Israeli operations, targeting two barracks in the occupied Golan and the occupied Palestinian territories. And Iran's foreign minister says Israel is caught in the Gaza quagmire and has failed to achieve any of its goals in its genocidal war on the territory. Hello everyone, thank you for joining us. Now, Israel has launched fresh airstrikes and artillery shells on Gaza, keeping the Palestinian territory in a state of catastrophe. As 6 civilians were killed in the regime's aerial attacks on a commercial facility south of the Nusayrat refugee camp in central Gaza. Israeli warplanes also hit a group of people in a town near the southern city of Rafah, killing at least one and injuring several others. In Gaza City, 6 dead bodies were recovered from under the rubble of a house that was bombed by the Israeli military. The death toll from the U.S.-Israeli genocide in Gaza since October the 7th stands at over 33,100, most of them women and children. The genocidal campaign is now in its 7th month, despite international calls to end the bloodshed. The UN Humanitarian Coordinator for Palestine warns that the Gaza situation is simply catastrophic. Israel says it has pulled most of its troops out of southern Gaza in what it said is a move to recuperate and prepare for future offensives. 3 Israeli brigades left the southern city of Khan Yunis, but another remained to prevent displaced Palestinians from returning to their homes in the north. The Israeli military said a significant force will remain in the rest of the besieged Gaza Strip. The military wing of the Hamas resistance movement said Israel was forced to end its operations before achieving its goals. The Al-Aqsa Brigades dismissed Israel's claims that it has destroyed resistance forces in those areas from where it has withdrawn. Al-Aqsa added that resistance forces have always surprised Israel. Moti Abu Musabbeh, our correspondent in Deir al-Balah, joined us earlier with an update on Israel's announcement about the partial withdrawal from the southern Gaza Strip. Let's take a listen.
The Israeli occupation forces withdrew completely from Khan Yunis city after roughly 3 consecutive months of the continuous fighting. According to Al-Qassam Brigades, that withdrawal actually came as a result of the fierce and the resilient Palestinian resistance that faced the Israeli occupation forces in all battlefields in Khan Yunis city. And they even hours after that withdrawal, the Palestinian resistance actually launched a barrage of the Palestinian missiles into the occupied territories in a clear message that all that cruelty and all that brutality waged against the Palestinian people in Khan Yunis city and in all against all areas of Gaza Strip would never succeed to eradicate the Palestinian resistance, and the Palestinian resistance is still able to practice the genuine right of their resistance against the Israeli occupation forces. In the meantime, the Israeli occupation forces claimed that withdrawal came in the context of the Israeli preparations and to repositioning in order to wage another ground offensive against Rafah and Deir al-Balah city here. So these are the claims that claimed and promoted by the Israeli occupation forces, that they are bracing to wage another ground offensive against Rafah city and Deir al-Balah city. So the upcoming days are decisive in terms of what is what will take place on the ground here, either when it comes to Deir al-Balah city or when it comes to Rafah city.
International aid organizations have decried the colossal death toll from the 6 months of Israel's onslaught on Gaza and other devastating effects it has left on the besieged strip. The World Health Organization chief said this would remain a stain on all of humanity. Tedros Adhanom said the denial of basic needs, food, fuel, sanitation, shelter, security and healthcare is inhumane and intolerable. The International Federation of Red Cross and Red Crescent Societies described the situation as, quote, beyond catastrophic, with millions of lives being at the risk of hunger. It was where he warned that humanity has been all but abandoned. The Secretary General of the International Medical Charity Doctors Without Borders says international humanitarian law is being violated on a daily basis in Gaza. He has described the worsening situation in hospitals across the besieged territory. Let's take a listen.
We are definitely seeing rising rates of malnutrition. We are up to the situation in places like the Al-Aqsa Hospital, which is in the middle area of Gaza. We're in a really critical situation where our medics there are having to choose between giving beds to trauma patients who are seeking assistance and medication and surgery for some horrendous wounds, versus giving those beds to malnourished children. So we're absolutely seeing rapidly increasing rates of malnutrition. Firstly, there needs to be much more supply coming in, much more land crossings opened. And at the same time, that needs to, what we need to be aware of is that it's much more than counting trucks across the border. And a lot of the narrative that we have seen in terms of supply in this conflict has been oversimplified. And actually moving supplies around the Gaza Strip is critical. Being able to have medics who are qualified, fed in a mentally fit state to be able to treat patients is essential for providing humanitarian assistance. And hospitals, if I look at it from a hospital perspective, are obviously more than four walls and a roof. They're about running water, electricity, fuel, communication. And just on international humanitarian law, there are now 200 aid workers that have been killed in the Gaza Strip. There was the tragic incident from the World Central Kitchen just this week, which has brought attention to this issue. But international humanitarian law is being broken on a daily basis in the Gaza Strip.
A cancer-stricken Palestinian prisoner has passed away aged 62 after spending nearly four decades in Israeli jails. Waleed Dakka died on Sunday at a hospital near Tel Aviv. He suffered from chronic lung disease and was diagnosed with bone marrow cancer in December 2022 as a result of decades-long detention. Dakka's condition deteriorated further due to severe pneumonia and kidney failure reported in March last year. The Palestinian Prisoner Society has attributed his death to medical negligence and Israel's policy of slow killing against sick inmates. Dakka was arrested in 1986 and remained behind bars under the regime's so-called administrative detention policy, in which a person is held without trial for an indefinite period. According to prisoner groups, Israeli jail authorities frequently delay checkups and urgent surgeries for Palestinian inmates. The Islamic Resistance in Iraq says it has targeted two Israeli military sites in the occupied territories in response to the regime's massacres of Palestinians in the Gaza Strip. In a statement, the resistance group said it struck Israel's Western Yarden barracks in the occupied Syrian Golan Heights using a drone. A separate statement said that Yonatan barracks, located in the occupied Palestinian territories, was also hit. The resistance group underlined that it will continue to target Israeli positions and interests in solidarity with Gazans, who have been under incessant Israeli attacks for more than 6 months. In recent months, the Islamic Resistance in Iraq has carried out a series of attacks against Israeli targets. It has also hit U.S. military bases in Iraq and neighboring Syria in retaliation for Washington's support for the Israeli genocide in Gaza. Iran's foreign minister says Israel is caught in the Gaza quagmire as the regime has achieved none of its goals in its war on the Palestinian territory. Hossein Amir Abdullahian made the remark in a presser with his Omani counterpart in Muscat. The Iranian foreign minister said Israel is following the policy of warmongering and escalation in the region. He added that Washington has always fully supported Tel Aviv's warmongering policy. Amir Abdullahian also pointed to Israel's attack on the Iranian embassy in Syria. He noted that the U.S. cannot shirk its responsibility for its support for the Israeli crimes. Amir Abdullahian said Iran is an island of stability, or stability and security in West Asia, adding that the Islamic Republic will not allow anyone to violate the country's national security. Omani Foreign Minister Sayed Badr al-Busaidi, for his part, said Tehran and Muscat will work together to find solutions to regional tensions, including the Israeli aggression against Gaza. Following his visit to Oman, Iran's foreign minister will travel to Damascus as part of a regional tour. The Yemeni army is continuing with its pro-Palestinian operations despite Western military action and threats. Yemen says there will be more such attacks on Israeli-linked and Western ships until the regime stops its genocide in Gaza. Earlier, we discussed the issue in our news review program.
It's time now for the news review. The Yemeni army says it's launched new strikes on ships belonging to Israel and its Western allies. Brigadier General Yahya Sarid, the spokesman of the Yemeni armed forces, said that five military operations were performed during 72 hours. The attacks included a Navy missile strike on a British ship and a drone attack on American military frigates in the Red Sea. Two Israeli ships were also successfully targeted in the Indian Ocean and the Arabian Sea using a number of ballistic missiles. The Yemeni army stressed that such military operations will go on until the end of the aggression against Gaza. Now, I'm inviting a couple of guests to discuss this a bit and get some more information. So, Abdul Latif Al Washali, our correspondent, joining me from Sana'a. Mohsen Naqvi, human rights activist, is also joining me from Houston, Texas. Good to see you both, gentlemen. So, Abdul Latif, tell us more about this latest retaliatory operation by the Yemeni armed forces and about what the operations have been targeting. And as usual, they've been successful, and we just hear that the armed forces of Yemen are adamant to go on with such operations until the siege on Gaza is lifted.
Thank you so much. For the very first time, we see the spokesman of the Yemeni army speaking and announcing the successful targeting of an Israeli ship in the Indian Ocean. And you know, it's very far from the Yemeni territories to the Indian Ocean. So the Yemeni army will absolutely need very sophisticated weapons and missiles to reach those moving targets, which are ships. You know, the ships are moving in the sea, so it's very difficult to target a moving target. So I believe now that the Yemeni army is really capable of targeting the Israeli and American and British ships and the Red Sea and Gulf, and also on the Indian Ocean. And this operation proves that the recent statements by the leaders of Ansar, including Sayyid Abdul Malik al-Houthi, that they have very sophisticated missiles. They were not mere media propaganda. They were true. They are capable of targeting and chasing the Israeli ships in the Indian Ocean. According, you know, to the monitor, the American website, this is that the U.S. now is looking for a diplomatic way to calm down the situation in the Red Sea on the Gulf of Aden. You know, they failed militarily to stop the Yemeni army from attacking their interests in the region. The Yemeni army is continuing its operations in the Red Sea on the Gulf of Aden now.
Okay, thanks for that. Now, Mohsen, as you know, people around the world and also a number of governments have been lending their support for the Palestinians, especially since the past 6 months when this genocidal war started. But Iraqis and also Hezbollah fighters in Lebanon and Yemenis in particular, they have actually taken action against this. And despite all the problems they have back home, they're standing strong and they're fighting this. So tell us about the significance and also how effective this has been, because you know, the Israeli economy is really in shambles.
Yes, absolutely. So calling for a ceasefire in the United Nations is obviously not enough. We've seen the inaction of the international community, where we only hear words, which have been important from a diplomatic standpoint, but we need to see direct action. Direct action is what brings the concrete results that directly affect the Zionist regime, action that can directly help the Palestinians in either lifting the siege on Gaza, calling for a ceasefire, a permanent ceasefire, and a permanent evacuation of Israeli troops from Gaza. So the direct action that we've seen from the axis of resistance, specifically the Hezbollah and specifically the Ansarullah from Yemen, that's the kind of action that we need from all Arab countries to really be able to show that they're serious when they call Israel their enemy. And direct action will show and prove that they are serious in really giving the Zionist regime a tough time in terms of their existence in the West Asia region.
All right. Thank you so much for that. Abdul Latif Al-Bashal, air correspondent, Sana. Mohsen Naqvi, human rights activist in Houston, Texas.
Puts Day rallies and marches have been held in cities across Canada. Participants in the rallies call for immediate end to Israel's genocide in the Gaza Strip. Our correspondent Camila Escalante reports from Toronto.
Thousands came together for the annual International Quds Day March in the Canadian city of Toronto to show their solidarity with the Palestinian people, especially those in the besieged Gaza Strip. Palestinian solidarity organizations and communities rallied across from the U.S. consulate, calling on Ottawa and Washington to act urgently to end the Israeli terror campaign and genocide and try to save as many lives as possible.
This is one of the biggest Al-Quds Day commemorations in Canada every year. And this year it's especially important because people are motivated to come out in large numbers to bring an end to this genocide that's taking place in Gaza and underline their commitment to see a free Palestine from the river to the sea and a free Al-Quds, a free Jerusalem, free from Zionism and occupation.
Millions around the world are marching yesterday, today and tomorrow, all week. Thousands of cities and towns across the globe are making Al-Quds Day an international day, a call for justice and freedom, particularly for the Palestinian people as they are facing genocide and war crimes in Gaza.
The city has continued its heavy policing of pro-Palestinian demonstrations. Just 1 week ago, several participants were injured and six others were arrested in the annual Land Day commemoration by the Toronto police, who were captured on camera using excessive force.
So last week, people must have seen the videos by now, but the police completely attacked a peaceful rally, and there was horses involved, and this is what the police do. They're on the side of the Zionists, they terrorize people. You know, a protest, a simple, peaceful protest, you're not allowed. I mean, this is another example of the Palestine exception. That protest is good, it's a liberal, you know, it's a sign of democracy, except when you're talking about Palestine. You can't do that.
Participants also use Quds Day to condemn a recent deadly attack by the Israeli regime on Iran's consulate building in Syria's capital, Damascus.
Well, Iran has been subjugated to all forms of aggression at the hands of the Zionist regimes and their backers. But the last crime that Israel have done in destroying the Iranian embassy in Damascus, that is a zero tolerance. Iran will respond, and I think that Iran is being called upon by the people to respond against this Israeli aggression.
As the targeted killing of civilians and the starvation campaign continue, a temporary resident visa program announced by the administration in Ottawa 3 months ago has failed to bring to Canada any Palestinian relatives of Canadians from Gaza. Against that backdrop, families and activists are pressuring for a real arms embargo on Israel. Camila Escalante, Toronto.
Thank you for listening. Take care and bye-bye.
This is IRIB English Radio. With you early in the morning. With you at midday. With you till the night's end. IRIB English Radio.
The leader's speech on the first day of the Iranian New Year, attended by people from all walks of life. The leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, had a meeting with people from all walks of life on the first day of the Iranian New Year, on Wednesday, 20th of March. The meeting took place at the Imam Khomeini Hosseiniyeh in Tehran. In this program, we discuss the leader's remarks and points of view expressed at this meeting. Please stay with us. The leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, had a meeting with people from all walks of life on the first day of the Iranian New Year on Wednesday, 20th of March 2024. The leader described the coincidence of the spring season with the spiritual spring of Ramadan as a great blessing from the Almighty to his faithful and righteous servants. The leader added, "The spring of nature and the spring of spirituality coming together this year signifies that Almighty God is offering both types of His grace to His servants for their use. Of course, the difference between the two is immense. Today, both the spring breeze of nature and the spring breeze of spirituality can be used by all the pious, righteous servants of God. This is because spring breeze refreshes the atmosphere, brings a sense of freshness to our bodies, and is a source of growth, flourishing and flowering. The same concept applies to our spirit in the breeze of spirituality. The spiritual breeze of the spring of Ramadan breathes light and vitality into our souls. But what is the spiritual breeze of Ramadan? It is fasting, of course. Fasting is one of Ramadan's breezes. It is also the night of Qadr, the night of ordainment or the night of power. It is the supplications that are recited during the nights and during the days of Ramadan. These are all spiritual breezes that breathe into the soul of a resolute individual, contributing to their growth, rejuvenation and flourishing. They dispel spiritual lethargy and indifference. They transform a person into a righteous servant. During the month of Ramadan, you strive towards righteousness and become a righteous servant of God. The Almighty has made promises to His righteous servants in this world. In Ayah 105 of Surah Anbiya in the Holy Quran, the Almighty says, "Indeed, my righteous servants shall inherit the earth." As for the hereafter, in Ayah 69 of Surah Nisa in the Holy Quran, the Almighty says, "They are with those whom Allah has blessed, including the prophets and the truthful, the martyrs and the righteous, and excellent companions are they." There, the righteous servants will be elevated to the ranks of the prophets, the righteous, and the martyrs. I hope, God willing, that our dear nation, the entire Islamic Ummah, and all people whose hearts are devoted to God will use spirituality for their personal growth and progress. At the beginning of each year, Ayatollah Khamenei selects a slogan for the year to garner attention and direct the efforts of the country's officials towards achieving that goal. This year's slogan or motto is "Surge in Production Through People's Participation." The leader added, "Regarding this year's slogan, 'Surge in Production Through People's Participation,' it aims to motivate individuals to focus their efforts and thoughts on a key component of the country's fundamental strategy. The year's slogan is usually a part of the country's fundamental strategy. Not only does it focus the efforts and attention of our officials on a specific area, but it also serves to raise public awareness and demand for this matter. That is why we propose a motto every year, and this tradition has been upheld for many years. In recent years, the motto has emphasized and focused on the economy. Last year, the slogan was inflation control and growth in production. Official certified reports tell us that good things have been done in this field, however, it is still rather far from the desired result, and additional work is required. Therefore, I'm saying that last year's motto is one of our objectives for this year as well. Commenting further, Ayatollah Khamenei said, "The economy is one of the country's fundamental issues. Economic problems are one of the weaknesses for various reasons. When the country's economy is in a favorable situation, it can have a positive impact on all general aspects of the nation. It can positively affect people's religion and lives. The enemies have been trying to bring our country's economy to its knees for years, and they have put serious effort into this. The hostility of the United States and its allies has been evident over time, with their ultimate goal being the economic collapse of Iran. They want to bring the country to its knees economically. Of course, with the determination and efforts of our young people, and the efforts of the general public and officials of the country, the enemy has not succeeded in its objectives. And by the will and power of God, they will continue to fail in future years as well." The leader added, "Nonetheless, the enemy is relentlessly continuing their economic pursuits against the Islamic Republic. They're active in this area, so we too must be active. We must work tirelessly around the clock." Turning to productivity, Ayatollah Khamenei said, "Our country's productivity is low, and the resources we consume, such as water, electricity, time, and our human capital, do not yield a proportional amount of benefit as much as they should. However, these issues have potential solutions and can be corrected based on experience. God willing, action needs to be taken in this area as well, and we need to raise our productivity." Turning to two important issues of hope and faith, the leader said, "Our national interest today and our promising future hinge on hope and faith. I want to emphasize these two areas, hope and faith. If the light of hope is extinguished in our hearts, no action will be taken. We possess immense potential for advancement, a wealth of talented young people, a driven and dedicated nation. We have tremendous natural resources and an excellent geographical location. We are fully capable of achieving significant strides and advancement. We have made significant progress since the beginning of the Islamic Revolution. Now our enemies conceal this, and some people may not know how to articulate this properly. But we have the potential to achieve even greater advancements. However, these advancements are only possible if you and I remain optimistic about the future. We need to maintain our hope and understand that we can work and make progress and move forward." The leader added, "Praise God, we don't have a shortage of factors for being hopeful about the country's future. There are many things in this country that give people hope, including our scientific advancements in industry, in healthcare, in space science, in politics, and the advances we have made in foreign policy and what is considered as security in this country. Several million people rallied through the country annually on 11th of February, and praise God they do this with complete security. The elections are held in complete safety and security, few places in the world have this kind of stability, security, and public participation. These factors give us hope. Why should we not be hopeful when we have so many promising factors? Giving an example, the leader said, "Our military officials produce and launch a defense tool such as a missile. But in the enemy's propaganda, they claim this is a lie. This is why the launch of that missile is taking place in front of people's eyes. So this is what the enemy is doing. But why did some people do this inside the country? In my opinion, some people are negligent. We should not allow ourselves to be negligent, and we should not make this mistake." The leader added, "I advise our dear young people to stay ahead of the enemy's plans. Our young people should stay ahead of the enemy's game. The enemy wants you to lose hope. Your efforts to create hope and to instill hope in the hearts of the youth should surpass the enemy's attempts to eliminate it. The enemy does not want certain voices to be heard, both at the national and international levels, but we must work in the opposite direction and ensure that these voices are heard. Today, there are various tools at our disposal, and that is one point. Another point regarding national interests is the issue of uniting the hearts of the people, uniting the determination and will of all the people. Unfortunately, we have problems in this area. We have setbacks. Social interactions and empathy are very important. We have become neglectful in this area. We are creating disturbances in our national unity with our own actions. We're all responsible for this neglect. We all have a duty to preserve national unity, people's unity, and the bond between the people and government officials, and strengthen this bond day by day." Turning to the issue of Palestine and the situation in the Gaza Strip, the leader said, "Resistance in the West Asia region is currently a fundamental issue that has captured the world's attention. The issue of Palestine can be looked at from several angles. Firstly, the events in Gaza have shed light on the nature of the oppression and darkness that is prevailing in the world. This Western world, the so-called civilized world that claims to be an advocate of human rights, among other things, has shown the nature of the darkness that has taken hold of their lives, their thoughts and actions. More than 30,000 Palestinians have been massacred, including babies, children, teenagers, young people, the elderly, women and men. Within a short period of time, over 30,000 people were murdered. Their homes and their country's infrastructure have been destroyed. And yet, the so-called civilized Western world just looks on. Not only does it fail to prevent the crimes of the Israeli regime, it also is supporting these crimes. In the very first days of the Zionist regime's brutal war on Gaza, the United States continuously made visits to the occupied territories, and so did the Europeans. They showed their support and assistance for the Israeli regime. They openly announced it, and it wasn't just an announcement. They sent weapons and resources as well to the Israeli regime. They provided all kinds of support for the Zionists. This is the darkness of today's world. This is the kind of world that we're facing today. It is only natural for those with a conscience, individuals who have an awakened conscience in the region, when they witness the oppression being carried out by the Zionists that has been going on for over 70 years now, they do not remain silent or passive. They think of resistance. This is the reason the Resistance Front was established. It was formed to confront this ongoing oppression being carried out by the Zionist criminals against innocent Palestinians. We'll be right back. Turning to the United States and its actions with regards to the Israeli war in Gaza, the leader said, "As for the United States, the US put itself in the worst possible situation with regards to the issue of Gaza. The United States chose the worst stance in the region. What it did has made it despised throughout the entire world. Those who take part in pro-Palestinian protests on the streets of London, Paris and other European capitals, and in cities throughout the United States itself, are in fact expressing their hatred towards the United States. The US has become despised in the world. It was already despised in the region, and this hatred has increased. They have an incorrect understanding of the issues of this region. The decisions they made that are based on that incorrect understanding are also wrong. Wherever it is in the region, be it in Yemen, Iraq, Syria, or Lebanon, any measure that is taken by the fighting, brave resistance forces, the US attributes to Iran in their assessments. This miscalculation will definitely bring the United States to its knees. They don't understand the peoples of this region, and they insult regional nations, and the courageous young people, who are wise, strong-minded, and determined." In further comments, the leader said, "Of course, we support the resistance. We support the resistance groups as much as possible. We applaud their endeavors, but they are the ones making their decisions and taking action, and in what they are doing, they are right. We believe that the Zionist regime is committing an immense oppression in this region. This is a very big oppression that is taking place. But this oppression must end. Whoever becomes involved in this great jihad, this human jihad, this Islamic jihad, we are on their side. We will help them. And by God's will and God's power, we will achieve our objectives." In concluding remarks, the leader wished God's greetings and mercy and blessings on all those present.
This is A to Z. An introduction into Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, asking for forgiveness in these last few nights of the holy month of Ramadan. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. So we are here talking about the holy month of Ramadan, a month which truly is full of blessings and different good things that Allah has blessed us with. It is filled with such spirituality and purity. And one interesting thing, even though it is a little bit unfortunate and it makes you a little bit sad, is how the holy month of Ramadan very quickly ends. It seems that in modern times, the holy month of Ramadan every single year seems to fly by faster. And this beautiful banquet of Allah, this beautiful feast in which we were the divine guests of a very divine and sublime host, quickly comes to an end. Now, before this holy month of Ramadan ends, one of the things that really is of great importance is this idea of istighfar and this idea of asking for forgiveness. You know, we did talk about this concept in a previous program on the early days of the holy month of Ramadan. But now, as the holy month of Ramadan is closing, this is one of the things that we really need to focus on and we really need to pay attention to. And from the bottom and the depth of our hearts and souls, we need to do a very sincere istighfar. and ask the Almighty Allah to forgive us before this holy month ends. Amirul Mu'mineen Imam Ali alayhi salam has very eloquently given us a warning and has said that truly wretched is an individual who has not been forgiven in the holy month of Ramadan.
رمضان المستبين جاء بالنور المبين رمضان 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 القانتين.
Welcome back. This is A2Z on IRIB English Radio. So we're talking about forgiveness and istighfar in these last few days and nights of the holy month of Ramadan. You know, as we said in the previous segment, the holy month of Ramadan really passes by so quickly when you think about it. And inshallah, may Allah give us the blessing and the opportunity to witness another holy month of Ramadan in our lives in the upcoming years, inshallah. So we were talking about istighfar and how Imam Ali alayhi salam has said that the most wretched of individuals is the one who has not been forgiven in the holy month of Ramadan, really showing us the importance of asking for forgiveness and being forgiven. Now, there's various reasons why perhaps, you know, we do not attain forgiveness. One is that, well, we don't ask for forgiveness in the holy month of Ramadan, or we are not sincere in our forgiveness and seeking forgiveness. Or, for example, we have continued to, God forbid, commit sins in the holy month and we haven't really, you know, repented, or we haven't really tried to change our lives, right? Because trying to change our life and trying to improve ourselves, this is a form of istighfar. So in these last few nights, with a sincere repentance, you know, and really having a intimate conversation with Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, and really asking for forgiveness and feeling regret and shame for what we have done, and asking for forgiveness for those things, and then using our faculties for good. These are some of the things that we should do before the end of the holy month of Ramadan.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parstoday.ir.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
taking the limelight.
The situation in Rafah is overwhelmingly catastrophic, as an estimated 1.5 million people remain crammed in a patch of land that was home to 250,000 before the war. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. The Electronic Intifada wrote, Mustafa and his family have been uprooted many times over the past 6 months. The first displacement occurred when the Zionist regime bombarded Arimal, a neighborhood of Gaza City. The family's home was destroyed as a result. The family went to stay with relatives in Jabalia refugee camp. The relative's home was also attacked. The family then took shelter at a school run by the UN Agency for Palestine Refugees. It too came under fire. The family were having one meal per day at most in the north. As the time went on, they could not find any food at all. Mustafa did not want to leave the northern part of Gaza, but starvation forced us to flee, he said. And so the family headed to Deir al-Balah in central Gaza. The house in which they found shelter that was attacked by Israel within a few weeks of their arrival. Now, the family are in Rafah, Gaza's southernmost city. They are staying in a relative's home. Mustafa is deeply worried by the Zionist regime's repeated threats to conduct a major ground offensive in Rafah. If such an offensive occurred, he doesn't know where the family could live. He said, I think we would have to go to our graves. We would have no other choice. Hamza similarly had to leave Gaza City. He and his family moved to Khan Yunis, southern Gaza, during the all-too-brief truce at the end of November. The family were staying in a tent near Nasser Medical Complex, where the Zionist regime ordered the evacuation of the area in January. The hospital is one of many to have been besieged by the Zionist regime. Following the evacuation order, the family walked to Rafah. They are among the vast numbers of people now living in tents, Hamza said. The situation is catastrophic in Rafah. There are vegetables in the markets, but their prices have hit the roof. So we can only eat canned food, which doesn't give us the nutrition we need. He added, we have already lost several kilos in weight. I wonder how much more we will lose when Israel undertakes a ground invasion and leaves us with little access to food and water. We could die from starvation. Soher is a mother of three. She has paid tens of thousands of dollars to a company arranging travel for people from Gaza. The money had been earned from her work in digital marketing. She said, I have spent most of my savings so that my children and I can survive. She's now waiting to see her family appear on a list of people permitted to leave Rafah and enter Egypt. It can take a month between handing over money and being granted the required authorization for travel. Soher does not know what she would do if the Zionist regime launches a major ground offensive in Rafah before her family is allowed to travel. A major offensive against Rafah would result in the same type of wholesale destruction that the Zionist regime has inflicted on other areas, Soher predicts. She said, we will die if we stay. There will be massacres and starvation everywhere.
Meanwhile, Middle East, I wrote, in Gaza, if you get sick, you either wait for God's mercy or wait for your death. There is little to nothing by way of treatment. If every Palestinian in Gaza spoke about their loss and suffering, the sea would run dry before these stories could end. We have lost our cities and towns with their memories, streets, schools, mosques, and churches, a Palestinian in Gaza said. Both Gaza's history and present are being wiped out. In the heart of every challenge lies the seed of hope, and amid every tragedy, the strength of resilience and willpower shines through. Despite the many wounds, Gaza's story remains full of tenderness, strength, and hope. Gaza has faced the harshest conditions, yet it has not surrendered or stopped dreaming of a better tomorrow. In each of its people lies the courage of a struggle and a desire to build a future that restores Gaza's charm and peace. Resilience and determination to live with dignity burns within Gaza residents. And with each passing day, hope is somehow maintained and the will to move forward grows despite all the hardships.
Welcome. Zionist fears of Iranian retaliation for the attack on the consular affairs section of the Iranian embassy in Damascus were present in Zionist media, which confirmed that the response is imminent. Also, American-Israeli coordination meetings regarding Rafah and the situation on the ground in the Gaza Strip, along with protests against Netanyahu. I would like to go ahead and welcome our guest today, Professor Jamal Wakim, professor in history and international relations. Welcome.
Hello.
Let's start today with the Zionist media, which has paid close attention to the phone call between Biden and Netanyahu, describing it as extremely difficult. Professor Wakim, how do you interpret this phone call between Biden and Netanyahu? Does it actually indicate a change in Washington's policy towards the entity, as many have already suggested?
I believe that the Biden administration is fed up with Benjamin Netanyahu for too many reasons. It didn't start now. It started right after the, the start of this confrontation in Gaza with targeting the civilians indiscriminately, which I don't think that it moved much the sentiments of of Biden, but it caused a lot of embarrassment for his administration worldwide and also with the Muslim community inside the United States.
Well, as you mentioned there, this is not the first time that we have heard warnings from Biden to Netanyahu, but nothing has changed regarding the aggression. And as you're mentioning, why is this uproar in this case describing it as tense?
Well, of course, Biden has given too many, deadlines for Netanyahu to achieve, quote-unquote, the objective. But Netanyahu couldn't do much except for targeting the civilians and killing the civilians. Lately, media talked about the incident that... of the killing of seven, rescue workers in Gaza, which caused uproar in worldwide. Too bad the Western public opinion wasn't moved much by 30,000 Palestinian victims, but it was moved by the killing of six or seven, Europeans,
the humanitarians.
Humanitarian workers.
But
I think there is an undeclared dimension mm-hmm. for this fierce conversation, which is that of the bombing of the embassy, of the Iranian consulate, actually.
Which we're going to go ahead and talk about now.
Yeah. So I think that this has been tackled in the conversation, especially that Netanyahu was trying, in his move, to push the United States into a direct confrontation with Iran.
There have been growing Zionist fears of Iran's response to the attack on Damascus and the calls from commentators and experts not to underestimate the Iranian response. Actually, Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah said that an imminent response is coming now. What do you believe?
Well, I think so. As an observer, let's say. And if I want to see it in a very objective way, I think that Iran needs to retaliate. Because if it doesn't, this will be a big embarrassment for it. And it will retaliate in kind and quality. I mean that it wouldn't retaliate through proxies, let's say through allies, but it will retaliate directly. That's most probably. I might be wrong.
So could this lead to a regional war, perhaps?
And there are a lot of calculations that should be taken in consideration by Iran. First, as I said, it will directly respond. That's one thing. Another thing, it will also respond in kind. So maybe target an Israeli embassy somewhere in the world.
So eye for eye, basically.
Yeah. I might be wrong. I'm not trying to
predict. Your point of view, of course, yes.
Yeah. And at the same time, Iran should calculate its moves. So we need to try to understand why Netanyahu did that. It might be that he's trying to push the United States into direct confrontation with Iran. And if I want to put myself in the shoes of the Iranians, if they want to react, they shouldn't react in a way that would make them fall into the trap set by Netanyahu. So that's why it's very, delicate
calculation. And as we know, Iranians usually don't do this.
Yeah. Maybe they do a mistake, I don't know. But if I want to be, I'm trying to see things from afar.
Yes.
So they need to take in consideration avoiding being pulled into Netanyahu's trap, because Netanyahu was trying to cause instigate the United States into a military strike to Iran since years now. So,
actually, we're going to go ahead and move on to what's going on there. In the Zionist entity, widespread military, security, and political alert is on in the entity, fearing the Iranian response among the measures taken, which is actually putting the Air Force on high alert. As we saw here in the media, I mean, do you believe the Zionist entity has miscalculated this assassination on the Iranian embassy in Damascus?
I don't think so. I believe that, of course, Netanyahu has been reverting to desperate measures because he's a desperate person. He knows very well not only that Israel is cornered, actually, because it's been trying to achieve, quote-unquote, its objectives since October, but it failed to achieve any tangible result, except for the killing of civilians, which has been backfiring on it worldwide. And Netanyahu, he's desperate because also internal opposition is mounting. Prior to the operation against Gaza, he was in a very bad political shape for years. He had to go through five consecutive elections